Hi, and welcome to the Insiders by Durham Lane, where we get perspectives from industry thought leaders about strategies that are unifying marketing and sales cycles to help accelerate growth inside your world.
Welcome to the Insiders by Durham Lane, an industry podcast that connects the worlds of marketing and sales one guest at a time. I'm your host, Richard Lane. I'm co-founder and chief commercial officer of Durham Lane. And today I'm thrilled to be joined by Dave Mackay. Dave is the sales director of SA Global, an organization that empowers businesses to achieve more faster through their Microsoft-based services that address industry challenges through vertical-focused solutions. I know Dave from a previous life as well, so I'm convinced we're going to have a great conversation today. Dave, welcome to the podcast and thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much for inviting me to do this. I'm really looking forward to it and went through some of the podcasts you've done before, so there's been some great, brilliant people in here. So I don't know why you've got me, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, really, as I say, great to have you with us and thank you for joining me in the studio. So just to get us started and to help our listeners get a sense for you, Dave, could you just maybe provide a quick intro and let people know who you are and what you're about?
Yeah, I mean, this the older I get, this intro becomes a wee bit longer and I start talking about my CV, so I'll try and keep it as late as possible. But I wasn't always in the dark side of sales. I started my world as an engineer back in the day, telecoms engineer, and did that for a long period of time, and probably one of the roles I harp back to because I enjoyed it so much, you know. Yeah. As getting back on the tools kind of thing. But my world now, I moved into sales probably, I was about 29 to 30 year old, moved into sales, and that was pretty much in an IT space, putting EPOS warehouse management systems into large organisations and petrol pump controllers. So I still had that engineering background, but then went into a kind of selling of that, which was a really soft landing, I might say.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was servicing customers that I already knew. I had a reputation that I could build on as a sales individual. So it became a fairly soft landing. I look back at it now as opposed to people coming straight into it. So I did that for a number of years and then really felt that, okay, let's challenge yourself. Let's see if you can actually do this sales thing. Because if I'm honest, when I was an engineer, I didn't have a high regard for salespeople.
Yes.
That was the reality.
Yes.
My view is they sold me into businesses and it caused me nothing but pain as a person that had to deliver it.
Yes.
So my reputation of my view of salespeople wasn't of the highest standard. So even when I first moved into sales, I was very much of the opinion that I'll still be a sales engineer, not a salesperson, because it made me feel as if I could cross over both areas and also have a bit of self-respect, because I didn't respect the role enough in terms of a salesperson. But when I decided to embrace it, to say, okay, this is going to be my career now, because financially it was absolutely providing me a lifestyle that I was looking to get for me and my wife, and we just had a kid as well, so it was looking to do that. So I very much then embraced it and decided to challenge myself to move from a background that I'd been in for a long period of time into the ERP, CRM, Microsoft world, where I would really have to go in and understand business process and really in there and talk to clients and really unpick their business need. So a very, very, very steep learning curve. And I did that, as I say, probably around 33, 34 year old. And it was the biggest learning curve of my career to date
right.
In terms of the change in sales acumen or sales ability.
Yeah.
And the learning curve I had to take myself on there on in.
I mean, there's so much already to talk about, for particularly when you think of the Insiders podcast and our listeners and the topics we cover: sales marketing alignment, the profession of sales, profession to be proud of, some of the challenges that come with the perception of sales. So we'll dig into some of that as we go, Dave. I think what I love, though, so far about the outline of the journey is that you were the guy that was there to implement what had been sold, and then you became the guy that did the selling. So hopefully there's going to be the talk of the professionalism of the world of selling as we go through today. So let's get started, if we can, around marketing and sales alignment. It's a big topic. We cover it a lot on the podcast, but I think you've got some particular examples, I think, where, you know, and sometimes we learn from things when they don't go particularly well. So perhaps we can dig into some of the challenge with the connection between those two worlds. Can we start there?
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, I've had a mixed period with working with marketing teams, from being a BDM right through to the role I do just now. It's always been interesting, more so when I moved into sales director role, that, you know, often I would be asked to pick up the marketing function as part of my role. And I'm not a marketeer. I've never been a marketeer. So it's one of the things, salt and pepper sounds fantastically well together, so does sales and marketing, but they do two very different things and have very different needs and bring something different to the table. So it's important that you understand that. And I, from a BDM point of view, I very much found the challenge being not being clear on what the expectation was from the marketing team for me as a sales individual.
Right.
And that continued through being into sales director role. And where I find where I have had challenges is that, if I'm honest, it's insecurities on both sides. And I truly believe, and I treat this like any, I suppose, partnership that I have with any outside company who's coming in to do a service for us, or we want to partner somebody else. We have a responsibility to be clear and concise with communication with each other, to be truly understanding each of our expectations and wants from each other, to ensure that we can then deliver on that. And I find where it hasn't worked well for me in the past is where I go into a lot of organisations where we're trying to rebuild a sales team, a sales function up. So you find there's distrust can be there from the minute you walk through the door. Yeah. That can actually, it's not just marketing from that point of view, it actually filters through it into the delivery teams and operationals as well. And we have a culture change that we need to do when we go in. But from a marketing standpoint, it's very much about how do I get a hold of that and break down that barrier? Because straight away it's like, I've got to build trust, and that's fundamentally needs to be there. And removing the insecurities that I'm here to service marketing and they're here to service me. And be clear with each other of what our expectation on that. And unfortunately, with the world I go into and generally trying to get businesses up and back up and running, I have to spend a lot of time getting to that point.
Right.
And, you know, I have great examples where it's worked well. The examples of it not working well, you know, I've got marketing functions building a lot of energy and time into great campaigns to go out there, but haven't engaged sales to help enable that to happen. You know, so it goes out and we're just as surprised as the customer.
Yes.
There's a new marketing campaign happening and there's no ask of sales to be involved. And that's what I try to break down to make sure that we, marketing get it to a certain point, but we have a responsibility as a sales function to take it to the next level. And selling and pushing the message out there to ensure that we not only get the benefit from a sales point of view, where we get our SQLs off the back of it and leads, but marketing have their goals to hit as well. And for them to get true ROI on a campaign, sales need to take it all the way to the nth degree to ensure we can see that true end goal, customer signs in the dotted line. That breadcrumb trail all the way through has to be there. And where I experience where it hasn't happened in the past is marketing teams very much stop at the point that they push the message out and don't engage in sales because I've had a bad experience with the previous management team or function that was in the organisation.
Yeah, I was in a meeting yesterday and we were talking about, should we even have sales and marketing or should we just have revenue? You know, and that's a huge change.
Mm.
And I'm not sure it's one I'll see in my career span.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, that's the reality is that, you know, we should all be achieving the same goal. And you sort of mentioned the fiefdoms there. You mentioned the need to build trust. So really, just like you need to win the trust of a new prospect, you need to win trust of your internal colleagues and service providers and service purchasers as well, don't you? So when we spoke pre-recording, you talked about some examples where you were totally in sync with your CMO colleague. Could you just maybe share the difference that makes compared to having the, you know, the distrust or the lack of trust? Talk us through the impact of there being trust and that sync being connected.
Probably the best example I had of it is a gentleman called Nick Eads, who was my CMO at a previous organisation. And he understood sales and he understood his role and understood what I did.
Yeah.
And it helped me. And I put more of the onus on his ability to understand what that meant from a sales point of view, enabled me to be transparent and open with him what my expectation was. He almost could finish my sentence at times in terms of what I was wanting to get out of him. And equally then he was very clear in what he was going to give me and what he expected from me. And from the very first couple of weeks of working together, the synergy was there. You know, we worked very, very closely. We got on well, we challenged each other, we knew what was expected of each other. The trust was there from the minute go. The insecurities, as I put it down to other businesses I go into, that the feelers are risk it, I'm challenging them because I've got an agenda. There isn't an agenda other than to be successful. And that's what Nick was really fantastic at, in understanding what I was trying to achieve. And it wasn't to do anything to him or his function.
Yeah.
It was to make sure we were successful as an organisation. And he came from the same mindset of, we're here to be successful together as a team. This isn't one or the other, or two different departments. We're a unit, and the two is we just worked really, really well, communicated on a regular basis. In fact, most days we were talking to each other. We just had a partnership truly formed, and it resulted in what was a very lean pipeline when I walked through the door into a very healthy pipeline and growth in the organisation. At the end of the day, Richard, why do we do this? We do it so we get that bottom line, yeah, generating pipeline. That's what we do it for. And even more so, I'd say, in this era, that our sales team expect to see the pipeline before they have to find it. And that's what Nick was able to work with me and we were able to do together. And it was and he's a fantastic guy.
So success built on trust. It's great.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, that's a great example, Dave, of the power of trust and the power of people working to the same agenda and the same goal. We try and drink our own Kool-Aid at Durham Lane. So we talk about being the middleware that connects sales and marketing together. So we formed a RevOps unit. So we have sales, marketing, account management, all working together, all aiming for the same goal, communicating and, you know, aiming to be as collectively successful as we can be together.
Yeah.
Don't see that in a lot of places. I think it's got a lot better and it is getting better. And you know, perhaps some of our listeners will be sitting there going, well, we do this too, which is great. But I think that having the people at the top, when they're connected and working to the same rhythm and to the same goal, that's when you can start really seeing that success come through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you often see sales and marketing director. I think businesses are trying to achieve that because they feel when it's two separates, they're not seeing that cohesion, that working togetherness that you want to achieve and trying to find it. I've certainly through my time, is, you know, I'm only really talking about one person where it was perfectly in sync. But it all can, you know, there is partnerships I've had with other teams, but has it been as good as what I did with Nick? Probably not. Can it be improved on? 100%. But I do think it's a bit like back in the day, when I was talking about a move from sales to from an implementation point of view, I had a challenge in that I asked to look after the implementation point of view because that's my world was before. But we had conflicting interests because I was selling and they were implementing and I was the thing in the middle and it was a bit of a conflict.
Yeah.
And that's, I do believe that sales and marketing should be separate but find that cohesion together at the top as you just mentioned there just now. And if you've got it here and it's working, it's a blueprint you could take and move into other businesses and even better, you know?
Yeah.
It's certainly something that needs to be pushed.
You know? Absolutely. And you know, I would also caveat and say we've got a long way to go ourselves.
So
talk about blueprints. We were going to talk about building teams. And, you know, I guess listening to our conversation so far, it's what has worked, what hasn't worked, understanding, learning, looking to drive on and be the best version of yourself. So talk to us how that's manifested in the way that you build teams.
Mm. So I suppose it's worth taking it back to where I was as a salesperson, as an individual before, and how that it manifested into a team, very much a team mentality, and what I look for in teams. People who may listen to this and only will remember me as a BDM, and before so some people as an engineer. As an engineer, I had a very different mindset, but I found when I moved into as a BDM that I became this lone wolf, as the phrase is, although I hate using it, it's actually the phrase that everybody knows in terms of this individual who's only on one path. The unfortunate thing with that is the people who I worked with didn't see a good side of me, you know. My clients loved me, and in fact, my source of opportunities, they loved me as well because I treated them the way what I needed to get out of them. Let's be frank and honest. I hit targets on a regular basis. I excelled, if I'm honest, in doing my role. But where I'd failed massively was the team who did work with me day to day, the delivery teams, the customer service teams, the internal administration teams. I was poor in terms of looking back at that now. My engagement with them and how I treated them, how I communicated to them, and my directness. Being Glaswegian as well, my voice can be a little bit harsher sounding. So sometimes it's not always meant, but sometimes I can use it to my need. And it wasn't a good starting point from where I was. But I didn't know that. That's not something I knew.
Wasn't that interesting, though, from where we started today's conversation? You'd been an engineer and you knew what it was like to be...
Yeah.
The guy that you were now putting other people, you know, putting that onto other people yourself, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think, if I'm honest, as a BDM, one thing when you move into sales that you need to grasp very quickly, and I say this to the younger guys that come in, is the pressure of a target is very, very sobering at times, you know, you realise. And it's something you have to learn to deal with. And I think in my early career, I didn't deal with it the way I should have. It created a pressure on me that had to run 100 miles an hour. And as long as I was hitting my target, the world was okay. Right. You know? And it didn't matter what carnage I'd caused behind me and people lying in the street and whatever it may be, you know. And I often talk, and now targets is something that doesn't even, it's not even something I focus on in terms of a pressure point of view, you know. I have a drive and always want to be number one, got to smash no matter what. But from a dealing with that, it is a real lesson that you have to come to and learn that how you manage that yourself. And I don't think I did that in my early career very well. And that pressure I put on myself to achieve target was a negative impact in others that were working with me.
So that
my intolerance to not having it working at my pace and a lack of, my sales team will laugh at this statement, a lack of empathy was the biggest thing I had.
So the pressure coming from your desire to hit targets meant that you were doing whatever needed to be done to hit the target.
Absolutely.
With no real empathy about what that might mean to others.
Absolutely.
And yeah, and that manifests in all sorts of carnage, because I think the word that you used there.
So. Yeah, and it absolutely did. I wasn't a good fellow employee.
And do you remember the moment, Dave, when you recognised that in yourself?
I'd like to claim in that. What I actually had is one of the directors had a one-to-one with me. And, you know, it was a great one-to-one because I was hitting targets, so it was great. And I won't use the word he used in the room, but he introduced me to how to win friends and influence people.
Okay, yeah.
And I was very new. I wasn't great at school, didn't come out of school fantastic, wasn't academic kind of individual. Reading was not something I did. And even still now, I do read, but I'm more audiobook than anything else. But he bought me that book and gave me it in the one-to-one. And the coming to light moment was when I started reading that. There's a lot of things I did right. And it's the thing about How to Win Friends and Influence People, it's an old book from a different period, but such the basic fundamentals
such a good book.
Resonate so much. And I still read it now. I still go back and recap on things. But it had such a massive impact on me as an individual to reflect on myself for work life, but also personal life, you know?
Yeah.
Which the wife wasn't too happy with, because I was learning new skills to manage her, and she wasn't too chuffed about it, you know? But she's now caught back up. But the reality was it was at that point that started changing my mindset of how I conduct myself.
Yeah.
A lot of it, and as I moved on to different businesses, if I'm honest as well, there's an immaturity in me at the time of being alpha male, you know, showing the Glaswegian.
Yeah.
I'm unstoppable and I don't really care what anybody has to say. So there's an immaturity in me as well. And what it allowed me to do is learn more about me as an individual, to remove the barriers, remove the falseness, and just be me, because I'm not a horrible person. Sales team will argue the point of that. But the reality is, if it was just about me being comfortable in my skin without having to put a pretense on anybody, and that didn't happen overnight. That was a transition that happened over a couple of roles that I had in a period of time. And one we met when I was at TSG, I was going through that period of learning. But that was the fundamental start.
No, that's excellent. Yeah. I always think it's really important to pinpoint those moments. So that's great. And clearly not something that changes overnight. And something for listeners to be thinking about is, well, I mean, my biggest takeaway from that is at least you picked the book up and read it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people would be given the book and it would go on the shelf and I don't need that. Whereas you were clearly at the right moment. The manager at the time knew when the time was right and you followed that, and it's sort of changed your path, which is amazing. How do you use that learning with the teams that you're building these days today then?
Yeah, so I look back at myself. So yeah, we went into a rabbit hole there, didn't we? That's typical of me. But I take that learning and looking at myself as when I think about the businesses I go into. All right, so generally in the last few years, I've went into organisations where it's a rebuild of a sales team.
Right.
All right, we're starting the ground up. We're either taking some sales team out, putting some people in, or just reshaping the sales team. But one of the biggest challenges that I have is that, I mean, we talked a little bit about around marketing, but also that delivery aspect, building trust between departments, changing the culture and the organisation. It's a big, big part of what I do. You know, and that culture leads for how we set the tone in sales and what the expectation is from the other departments. And generally when I walk in, the trust in sales is completely gone. And I'd say that where I am just now, that's certainly been one of the biggest challenges, to make sure that our delivery operations side of the organisation and marketing can trust us as a sales function to do the right thing and not sell the wrong thing in. So when I go to build sales team, the individuals I look for, I want the guys at Hunters. People say to me, oh, but proper new business people, they're not really teams, they're lone wolves, they're lone wolves. I'm like, no. That's just convenient. You know, because I was a lone wolf, and I'd still say I've got the traits just now of doing so much. In fact, HR were talking to me the other day. They're saying, you need to release some of this, you know, and hand out it, let other people do it, you know. But what I look for in my sales team is that, yeah, I want that hungry desire and want to achieve. I want, you know, the thing, I'm sure you look for it yourself when you're hiring people, general curiosity in a salesperson.
Yeah.
They generally are interested. They ask the next question. They pull on the thread.
Yeah.
That's what I want. So they've got to come with that mindset of, not only from a sales acumen point of view, the curiosity, intrigued with what they do and passionate about what they do, but they understand that our sales team is a function of a bigger business and a team together we pull together. All right, we do not sell anything in our world without my pre-sales team being able sales team to do that. But equally, we can't sell it without our delivery team helping educate us during the sales cycle. In fact, during our process, we bring the delivery teams into the sales cycle because they hold far more gravitas with a client than sales ever will.
The client wants to speak to the people who do the job and speak the same language.
Absolutely.
The salesperson is, I always think of our job as we're the conductor, not the orchestra. You know, we're managing the various parts. But you might remember from the program at TSG, the Durham Lane Mantras. And this isn't one of our mantras, but it's, we call it our belief equation.
Mm.
And it strikes me from very similar to what you've been talking about. We talk about belief times knowledge. So knowing what you're doing, why you're doing it, understanding your world, that gives you confidence, not arrogance.
Yeah.
I think if you don't have the knowledge, you can come across as arrogant, but belief plus knowledge gives you confidence.
Yeah.
Times that by understanding. So what is my prospect, my customer trying to achieve? What might be helpful to them? How might that work? When would that happen? How would that operate? What might we do to help them here?
Yeah.
That's when you get high performance.
Yeah.
And that's, you're absolutely looking for curiosity, you would use the word. It's a similar thing. It's that insatiable desire to be inquisitive.
Absolutely.
So important.
You know, but they've got to, that's from a sales acumen point of view, but they've got to come in with that mindset that they are not the all-seeing eye.
Yeah.
The only function on work because of the bigger business need, because of delivery do their job, because marketing do their job, because of customer service are fantastic in there. You know, program directors are in there in accounts because we need their global organisations, but they're absolutely a tool that we should use within there. It's a team game. And that's probably my biggest mantra to my guys, that we operate with everybody else, not in silo of everybody else. And when I look for individuals when I'm recruiting, that's generally what I get. I try to achieve. I also, you know, a big part of my, that we kind of talked about earlier on, is that want to be better, that own self-development, that own, you know, one of my interviewing things I will ask, talk to me about your own self-development.
Yeah.
You know, I did something a few years ago, right? And this is when I was rolling out to another sales team, and since I tried to encourage if they would do self-development. And I said to them, okay, if I put a training course on for you to help learn yourself, how many can you show of hands? And I had 12 guys in the room, show of hands of who would all be happy to join on that training course. And they all put their hand up, no problem at all. I says, tell me, if I was going to charge you £1,000 for that training course, would you want to do it? And I kid you, there was maybe only three or four that put their hands up. And that told me a big story about the people I had in that room. Are they the right individuals for what we're trying to achieve here? You know?
Yeah.
Some were, and some changed their mindset and doing it. Some are a wee bit older in the space, and you know what it's like. Older generation, we kind of like, well, been there, done that, got the T-shirt. Learning isn't something I need to be doing. But it's something I know in every single interview I ask about your own self-development. What have you done to date to help you as an individual get better at what you do?
And you know, there is knowledge, support, learning at your fingertips more than, and probably it's so easy to capture people just forget to do it, right?
Yeah,
but it's
so,
I mean, there is, it's a, that's a great question to ask, and everyone is willing to say, yes, I'll do that, but are you willing to dip into your own pocket to do it? Yeah. That's when you start pulling out the performers and the people that with that desire and ambition. So
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
When you build a team, then do you have sort of, and I guess your team's all different sizes, but you're looking for team players, you're looking for people with that are inquisitive and curious. Mm. You're looking for people that have empathy, I guess, and you build from those grounds. Do you have a scorecard or a framework that you use, or is it mainly through getting to know them?
Yeah, I'd say it's the latter. It's generally getting to know them. I used to actually have a process where pre-COVID, they would, you know, because everything's done via Teams now and so on. And you maybe, hopefully, maybe not seen it. I generally advertise jobs as myself. I generally do a video on LinkedIn and say I'm looking for jobs, which seems to work really well because they get to see who the boss is in a sense, you know, and it's
good qualifier.
It absolutely is. But I used to do a thing where I'd invite them to the office and then put them up in a hotel and they take them out for a drink and food. But it was to put them in a more social environment and relaxed environment so I could get to see them as individuals and how they would fit into my team.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little more difficult now because everything is so Teams and I still can meet up with people, but I equally am guilty of I can get more done, I can facilitate, I can get on without having to travel to see people. So it is more of the getting to know things. There is certain criteria and I set during an interview process that they have to show me and talk me through in a mindset because I have a methodology I work to and all that good stuff. So I have that element to it. But it's generally, one good people, and what it's the go for a pint test, you know?
Yeah.
Would I go for a pint with this individual? And if I would, you generally, they were in a good space. And thankfully, I don't come across too many that I am in a negative space with. There is, unfortunately, salespeople out there that have that arrogance you talk about before.
Yeah.
That feel as if it's I'm lucky to be talking to them. It's a mutual two-way thing.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
You know?
Good. Okay, well, that's a virtual pint over Teams. Not quite as good as the real thing, right? But there
absolutely
we go.
Not. Absolutely not. Okay,
well, Dave, it's been fascinating to chat through your journey so far. And I know there's actionable insights that we've ticked off throughout the conversation. Is there anything else that you'd like to share just before we move into our Ask the Expert session? Is there anything else that you'd like to share with the audience that they can take away and action immediately if you were your younger self perhaps listening to this podcast?
I think if my number one thing I suppose I look at is I wish I had learned to self-educate sooner. I wish I had get into that. And equally, I take it as from a sales profession point of view, my attitude towards sales was wrong, you know, and didn't see it for the role it can be. You can absolutely have a wonderful life doing this. You can earn good salary to really give your life, your family, that a certain lifestyle. And it's a role that should really be explored and people should look at it a little bit. Now, because you don't go to university, because you don't get a degree in it, people maybe look down at it as opposed to giving it the real kudos it should get. But what I learned through the self-education in sales, not only my own personal stuff, through things like How to Win Friends, Influence People and other things, but other books that are all around sales and how you can be better at what you do. You know, I run Medic Sales Methodology as my methodology through any of the businesses they go into. But there's tools around that of how you can be better at what you do to really invest in it. So if you are going into sales, I'd say you want to invest that time.
It's interesting. We did a podcast recently with Mark Ash, who's the CRO of Konica Minolta and who are a long-term Durham Lane customer. And we had a great conversation about the professionalism of selling. And Mark said one of the challenges, which I agree with, is there's no bar to entry.
Yes.
Which is why I think it has a reputation it has, but also it means that there's more of a requirement for the people that really want to become sales professionals to be absolute self-starters and self-learners.
Yeah.
Because there isn't that framework out there. So if you want to do it, go and do it, because the rewards and the opportunities and what sales gives you back are just unbelievable.
Absolutely.
But because there isn't that pathway, you have to really want to do it rather than just being put into it and it happening to you.
Well, I take that one step further as well. You're absolutely, the individual has to want to do that. But I'd say there's a responsibility on me as a sales leader, because although I look for it within the salespeople I hire, it's an obligation on me for the younger team that are coming through or the people that are in my team to enable that learning.
Yeah.
You know, so everybody that starts in my team gets Mark Weinberg's simplified sales book from me when they start. They may choose to read it, they may choose not to. Then I'll move into the challenge or I'll move into different books. I facilitate the ability to do it. And that's driven out of the fact that I believe that the generation in sales now is very different to where I was. I was very much just left to it and get on with it and produce the magic, you know.
Yeah.
And it builds a resolve in you. It's why I always think people should go cold calling as part of their career cycle, just because they get used to getting told no and pushed back or saying, why have you phoned me? I'm not interested in talking to you. Particularly CFOs with that. But the education that I never got from sales directors or leaderships within the businesses is almost a blueprint of what I try not to do.
Right.
And I try to ensure that I'm facilitating that ability to learn as best I can. And I'm genuinely interested in that individual and how I can help them get better at it. And there's so many things, I'm sure you're doing the same through your career, that you learn, you go, I'm not going to do that. Or you've learned, you've done something a certain way before, you're going to make sure you pivot it slightly to get it better. So I'm constantly learning myself. So I'm not by any means perfect with my guys at all. But I think there's a responsibility as a sales leader to make the effort to teach your guys how to get this done and do it well. You know, doesn't mean I'm the best salesman in the world, that's for sure, but I can try and facilitate that ability for them to learn.
Yeah, that's great.
One thing salespeople tell you, we've got no time to do that.
Yes, no time.
No time to do it. So it's about blocking that out. You know?
You have to make the time. Time never creates itself, does it? So, very good. We got a question from Alice, Dave. We perhaps have answered some of this already, but there may be something else we can pull out. But what are some of the most common barriers to achieving sales and marketing alignment?
Yeah, I probably think we covered a lot of this off, and I'll reiterate myself here again, and sorry if it's repeating, but generating that trust between the two individuals.
Yeah.
Communicating, being clear on expectations for both parties to ensure that you're pulling in the same direction and both parties will get the output they want from it. But fundamentally, the core of it is trust between the two is probably the things I'd say that gets you to the point you need to get to.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. So that openness to work towards a common goal as well. Dave, I think it's been a brilliant walk. Hopefully it's been quite therapeutic for you, actually.
Yeah. it's been good.
Really enjoyed the chat with you. And again, thanks for sharing your learnings. I think there are so many really tangible, practical things people hopefully listening to this podcast can go out and just do, whether it's buying How to Win Friends and Influence People or any book that has been recommended to them, going to their boss and saying, this is how I want to get better. Help me. And just thinking about their practice and where they want to get to. So loads of brilliant stuff. Thank you so much. We're going to finish with our last question, which is often the hardest. We have a bit of a laugh over it in terms of how complicated it seems to be for people. But we have the Insiders Spotify playlist. So we have a playlist with all of our guests have the option to choose a track. Doesn't have to be meaningful for them from a work point of view, but it might just be a track that makes them happy or makes them think of selling or whatever it might be, or their biggest deal, whatever it might be. So have you had a chance to think what you would like added to our list?
Yes, and my default was almost to go to Oasis because that's my era, and I think Oasis and everything's great there. But the reality is there's a song that I play often just to get it going and make it happen and really just puts a smile on my face, and that's Firestarter by Prodigy.
Oh, right, nice. Excellent.
So it's it wakes you up in the morning, let's put it that way.
Brilliant. Yeah, I can just imagine that at sort of 6:30 in the morning or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Well, we'll close up now, Dave, but I really, again, appreciate your openness and transparency. I think it's been just so great. I think the journey is really not uncommon for many people that you've been on, but I think you've probably taken it further than many do. But you've also been very honest about where you came from and some of that process of how you've got to where you got to and into being a very successful sales leader. And I know your team follow you. Mm. That is probably the biggest accolade that one can get from a management point of view, right? So congratulations on that. And thanks so much for being on The Insiders.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity to do this, and hopefully it's been worthwhile for you. So
great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. And thank you to everyone for tuning in to The Insiders. Please subscribe on your preferred podcasting site to ensure you're notified of all of our new episodes as and when they're published. And if you'd like to learn more about Durham Lane and about our unique method of selling at a high level, please visit durhamlane.com for more information. Till the next episode, enjoy, happy selling, and we'll see you soon.
The Insiders by Durham Lane. Subscribe today to never miss an episode.